Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and we're going to skip the calendar for this week. You can always go online to latahrecoverycenter.org and look it up, and got all the information there. And today in the studio with me is a familiar voice, Miss Denise.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Denise, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for having me here today.
Oh, yeah, it's always good to catch you when I can because you are a busy person here. Remind everyone what your title is.
Sure, I'm a recovery coach here at the Latah Recovery Center, and I work with people who struggle with mental health issues and also with substance abuse disorder.
Right. Yeah. SUDS. Good old SUDS. I remember when SUDS meant something completely different.
Totally different. Yeah.
Because you went out and got some SUDS.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking of like the laundry SUDS, but okay.
those two different aspects, different sure. ways of looking at things.
Yeah.
Okay, so today the topic I kind of came up with, and Denise foolishly agreed to work with me on it.
Oh, no, I love your topics.
It's actually a couple of things. One of them being meeting people where they are, which is a phrase that you hear a lot around recovery. The basic meaning of it, I think Denise and I both agree, is finding out how to relate to somebody. By discovering where they are in either pre-contemplative recovery, which is almost still in the state of denial.
Yeah, it's pretty much, there's not much going on there at all.
Right.
Yeah.
And then also in, when they're contemplating and when they actually want to dive in and do the work, so to speak. And then the other half we'll talk about in the second half probably, although it kind of mixes in and out of it, I think, is taking responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, as far as in my mind, meeting people where they are, really it's getting to know someone, listening, finding out what kinds of struggles that they have, what their challenges are, their strengths, just kind of getting to know them and walking alongside of them. Finding out what they need.
Yeah. Right. And that
it grows and really, getting to meet with someone more and more, you get to know more.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Because, I'm thinking in terms of kind of the way I laid it out, the pre-contemplative, you made an excellent example of that, why don't you?
Yeah. So, I mean, usually you're pretty oblivious to the fact that there's a problem. My example was, this example was given as I was doing motivational interviewing videos for a handful of weeks. And that was someone comes in and they're working with a counselor and the person sits down and they're just like, yeah, I'm here because my work is requiring me to be. They're saying that I have some kind of a, alcohol problem. They're totally wrong, and I'm here, and I just really need you to just sign off on this paper that I'm good, and I can go back to work, because I just really need to get back to work.
Right.
And so, in that process, there can be a space where that person shares what's going on in their lives, and you get to listen and just kind of see where they are in their perspective and ask some questions and try to understand what the work is seeing as a problem and why they're not seeing it as a problem. And typically there can be some discrepancies that will kind of help them see that there Right. could be a problem. Because, I mean, I'm not here to force anyone into doing anything.
Right.
That's absolutely not my job. My job is just to work with someone and see what it is they want to work on.
Right.
And that may be that they want to work on their budget or something. And that's great.
Right, yeah. Right, right. Well, and yeah, you know, how many times have I heard new people come into AA and they say, you know, if my money problems were just solved, I probably wouldn't drink right. like I do.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's part of it. Yeah. But I mean, I understand what you're saying because you're working with a whole myriad of people. You know, mm-hmm. if somebody comes in and their behavioral health issue that they're dealing with is like procrastination to the point of, you know, debilitating.
Yeah.
Type of activity, you know, because tomorrow never gets here. I'll do it tomorrow, mm-hmm. but it never happens.
Yeah.
So someone like that, yeah, they might want to open up and say, I just need to learn how to learn new habits or something yeah. like that.
Yeah.
Where I'm coming from on that, you know, when people are in that, you know, state of denial, where, you know, I don't think, you know, alcohol is really my problem. Well, let's, you know, let's talk about what is your company think, you yeah. know, what are they telling
yeah,
you?
Yeah, what are they seeing that's, I mean, what right. are their reasons for you being here? Let's right. talk about that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And have you heard this elsewhere? You yeah. know, is your wife or your family concerned? And if they're not, tell me about your alcohol use. You think it's okay, so share that with me.
Yeah.
And,
totally.
You know, I'm not going to judge whether it's good for you or bad for you, but maybe we can look at things that are happening in your life that are around that alcohol use, you know, notice I didn't say abuse, use,
mm-hmm. yeah,
that might be contributing to these bad times you're having with other things.
Yeah. And sometimes like, something can be, I don't know, kind of discovered by the person that is coming in, and then there can be like a little bit of movement in that area. Maybe there's a goal that's set of something that the peer comes up with.
Right, right.
And
well,
then,
what if I just drank on the weekends?
Right,
or
and
what
so
if
then,
I just did this? Or
And so then that person comes back in and talks with me the next week, and we talk about, okay, well, how did that go, you know?
Right.
And just allowing space for conversations, and I don't have any expectations for the person. This is really about their journey. Mine has been my own, and it still is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have things in my week that support that for me as an individual. And
right.
I just want to help other people find the support that they need. If it's, you know, mental health wise, you know, what that looks like. And there are things that we can do together to help with that as well. I have met with a good handful of people who struggle with ADHD, and one of the things that can be issues in that is that they struggle to organize their time, to get goals met. Things have to be broken down a little different, and it really seems to help to be able to have someone talk that through, and then we meet back again and see like where were the struggle areas and where were some successes. Or maybe they didn't even try, and then we just keep moving forward.
Yeah, right, it's okay. Right, and you keep trying.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what I think quite probably a lot of people may not understand about, you know, the recovery coaching and even peer recovery support, the kind mm-hmm. of stuff that I can do here. I don't do much of it because most of my peer recovery happens in my program, mm-hmm. my Alcoholics Anonymous program, where I work with men to work through our steps, our 12 steps, and then, you know, also help them figure out how to relate the principles to, you know, applying the principles in their life, which is very close
sure.
to
so,
the
yeah,
same thing.
Yeah, you're talking about being a sponsor, and yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Right. And it's a less, it's not as clinical type of environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that your environment is like totally clinical necessarily, but you do follow certain guidelines, you know.
Oh, sure.
You're taught to, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you're taught to listen, you know, to meet the people where they are mm-hmm. and help them to move forward. Because in what you do and in what I do with AA, they don't allow us to hold a gun to the head of the person you're trying to help and force them to change. You can't do it. If they're not ready, they're not ready. But there are people, you know, shifting gears from the pre-contemplative to the contemplative where, you know, somebody perceives there's a problem, and they're just not sure, and they need somebody to help them suss out what is going on. And that's where, you know, you would come in with them and that listening, and then
suggestions going forward. If I could share a little bit more on what that looks like.
Sure.
We have a recovery wellness plan that we go through, and it's got some questions on it, just to kind of get you thinking of like what areas you might need to work on, or that maybe you want to make some goals, some areas that maybe at this time are okay and that you don't want to work on. And some of those areas are like community. How are your connections with the community? Do you have good support in your recovery or thinking about recovery, or maybe you don't? And how can you get more of that, and what kinds of resources could be helpful, and just kind of brainstorm on that. Health is the other one. Do you have a primary doctor? Are you going to the dentist? A lot of times when we're using or, you know, having trouble with mental health or substance use disorder, maybe we're not going to the doctor. And so having some talks about that. Your spiritual health, are you wanting to engage in a program that has a spiritual aspect specifically, whether that would be NA or like Celebrate Recovery kind of things? Are you looking to attend a church? And then your living situation, super important as you're trying to support a recovery in anything, how that is. Are you around people who are supporting your goals and your wants in life? Are you working? Do you have a job, purpose, volunteering? What kinds of, you know, how's that looking? And then just like daily living kinds of things. And so we go over these areas and fill out this wellness plan and just kind of then decide, okay, so for this week coming up, what might be something that could be worked on? And then, of course, what kinds of resources can I give to you, or can we figure out more about that would help support you in what you're trying to do this week and right. your goals?
Right.
And so the idea is to not at all be overwhelming, just to be working on something and just growing. These kinds of changes don't have to be huge and dramatic. They can just be step by step,
right.
which is a lot of times what will help a person start to feel a little bit more confident, because usually by the time that we're seeking help, things probably haven't been going okay for a while, and people mm-hmm. can be in a bad spot. And so I just think sometimes it's little steps.
Right.
You know, I want to assist you in being your cheerleader, but also setting you up for some success, you know,
right.
just at least a little bit of success, so that you can look back and say, hey, yeah, this month I worked on this and there's some change.
Mm-hmm.
Some people come in and wow, I'm just super impressed. They're on it. They've got a job. They've got housing. They're attending AA or NA stuff within 3 weeks. Like it just depends. And, you know, there's no expectation from my point of view what any of that looks like. Again, back to the statement that we opened up about the subject matter being meeting people where they're at.
Right.
We're all individuals completely different from each other mm-hmm. and at different places in our lives. And
right.
Yeah.
And in the recovery process, we're all in different phases, I would
Absolutely.
Call it, of that recovery. And I get what you're saying about like baby steps. In the AA program, some people have what we refer to as the burning bush experience, mm-hmm. where everything changes, you know, basically in a flash. You have this
yeah.
overwhelming epiphany type event, but that's rare. Most people's realization and desire to like see what's going on and take those steps to change their life is more of what they call the educational variety. In other words, you do a little bit of work, you know, like you assign somebody some project for a week. Go attend a couple of churches on Sunday if that's the direction you think you want to go in. And they go out and do that, and it's like, wow, great. You know, I found this place I went to, I don't know, real life. And, you know, I really got connected to it. Or I went to the Catholic Church, and the Mass really spoke to me. And then they have another area to start, you know, improving their life and their outlook on life, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And that can make all the difference in the world. That also would encourage me to be excited about, okay, now maybe I should go to the dentist because I've been having these horrible toothaches, and all I can think about when they happen is making the pain stop. And then I want pills, and then et cetera, and on into, you know, another horrible situation. But, you know, each event that is moving forward makes people want to move even further forward. For, you know, for example, myself, I celebrated 29 years of sobriety back in February. I should be cured by now, right? No, that's not how it works. But to this day, even though I've achieved a lot of, you know, 24 hours strung together that way, I still know from experience, the more work I do, the better it still gets. Mm-hmm. It still gets better. Not always a lot, not always noticeable, but, you know, occasionally somebody will, I'll share something in a meeting, somebody will come up afterwards, wow, you know, that really, you know, that really spoke to me, that really, you know, rang a bell in my head, you know, I think I want to, you know, work on this or that now. And I'm like, what did I say? Probably something to me that just might be second nature, something I've learned along the way. But people can embrace those things, and that helps them on their next step.
Definitely.
And that's why I keep going to meetings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not that, you know, I worry that I'm going to drink again. Although the farther you, and I've heard, the farther you're away from your last drink, the closer you are to your next drink. Not that I'm concerned about that. I don't really look at it as a safety net. I look at it as a proving ground, mm-hmm. where I can show proof to somebody else that, yes, you mm-hmm. can do it.
I feel like there's good purpose. Do you feel like you have good purpose in mm-hmm. attending meetings and continuing to share and listen?
Yeah, and it's a bit selfish.
It's like purpose and connection.
Yeah, it's a bit selfish because I have to do that. I have to share what I have unconditionally in order to keep it. Mm-hmm. We have to give it away to keep it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bizarre concept for a lot of people, but yeah. I mean, it works. Yeah. And then, like you were saying, the baby steps and moving forward. I don't want to keep banging on AA because, you know, even in AA, we say we're not the only path to sobriety.
Mm-hmm. There's many different pathways.
And sobriety is also defined as not just not being drunk or, you know, altered by substances. It's calm, sober state of thought. And that can apply to behavioral health as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, if what's making you happy is spending yourself into an obscene amount of debt by shopping, getting sober and, you know, having deep contemplative thought about that, you know, might help you,
yeah.
you know, wean yourself away from another destructive behavior.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing, that destructive behavior stuff. So there's a lot of different thoughts, feelings, and memories that we use coping things to avoid. For instance, I am currently working on not snacking. And so I've noticed with myself now that I've hold victory over, you know, substances and nicotine and definitely making better choices, that since I've been a non-smoker, I now snack when I'm having anxiety maybe or whatever. And actually, so what I've been doing this last week is as I'm wanting to do that, and like kind of use food as a calm me down or make me feel safe. It's all like neuroscience kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm writing down what my feelings or thoughts or memories could be, mm-hmm. so that I can start to have a better idea of like why I'm doing this. And then I will be tackling working on those things mm-hmm. to be able to meet those emotions and feelings healthier. Right. Like I get to decide how I'm going to live my life. And I can look back at a decade of making huge changes in my life and point to how it has worked. And I feel so much better. And I want to keep growing and learning and evolving and changing, and change is good. Mm-hmm. I didn't used to think so, and I didn't know how to change previously, but right. I have definitely hit a spot about a decade ago where I had to. It was change or lose everything. Mm-hmm. And so with the confidence that has brought, and with the actual ability now to do that and the tools, I'm, you know, working on these other kinds of things for my health.
Right.
Yeah, because there are just are still things. I mean, everyone has, I think it's fair to say, different kinds of ways that they cope with things.
Oh.
Whether, like you said, whether it's shopping or people use anger to keep people at a distance and keep themselves safe. There's all sorts of stuff that we do that are unrelated to substance use disorder or, you know, things like that. And so it's a really great journey to be able to see that I can work on things and make choices and that I have tools, you know, in my life.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's kind of getting towards where we're going to go next after we take a little break here. And that's taking responsibility and what that looks like. I think you just gave
a little bit on it.
Example of it right there for yourself. So let's take a little break and we'll come back and we'll get into responsibility. And you're listening to KRFP 90.3 FM, Moscow Pullman, the coolest station in the nation.
And you. give them a quick short, sharp shock. They don't do it again. Dig it. I mean, he got off line because I couldn't get him a fresh in line. He did it once. So he did for 2 months. I'm not with it. I mean, good manners don't cost nothing, do they? Hey.
Listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM Moscow Pullman. I am Radio Johnny, and across the conference room table with me is Miss Denise. And we have been chatting about the topic of meeting people where they are, you know, and discuss a little bit of what that looks like and how we get there and why it's important. And what can be done once you cross the Rubicon, so to speak, and get to that point where people are involved with a recovery program and are willing and start to make some changes. And one of those dubious things that we must do in recovery, I have found for me, is taking responsibility. And that paintbrush just cut a wide swath, because there's, you know, responsibility for your life right now and all the aspects of that, but there's also taking responsibility for things in your history, in your past. We do a process in Alcoholics Anonymous where we write out what we call a fourth step, and we write down, you know, what we're upset about. We'll basically go through a list of our resentments and what they are, who they're against, and what it threatens, and then how it affects us. You know, is it fear, fear of monetary disruption, sex life? It can be a lot of things, but we need to do that, and then we follow that up with a fifth step, which is we discuss the nature of our wrongs with somebody else and our higher power, God, as I like to call the higher power of my non-understanding. And then we even move on farther from there and correct what we can in the past. And that's kind of our method of taking responsibility. But as simple as that sounds laid out, sometimes we're not even aware of damage we might have done. I don't have children, but you have children, and I'm sure you wonder, prior to your getting into recovery, what did you not do that maybe you should have done? I'll throw it to you on that. I know it's kind of personal, but...
No, it's totally... Actually, it's perfect. So I first wanted to say that as you shared about the steps that AA and NA do, working through the steps also falls under, biblical stuff, as far as, what the Bible says about making amends with people and then, not doing the same darn thing again. Mm. But so for me, I knew I was affecting my family. That was really obvious. What it looked like in the beginning to figure out how to work on that or what to do came originally with, I'm a drug court graduate here at the Latah County Drug Court. And the first thing that we did in MRT, which is basically like morals and your time, how you spend your time and things like that, was stand in front of a room full of people and own all these things that we had done to affect our families, our friends, our workplaces, our communities, our bodies, and all this stuff with no excuses, but how we affected people. And it did take me a few times of, trying to get all those things down. When I was done doing that and did that well, I felt like 5 million pounds fell off of me. So I recognized that was a good thing to do, owning what you had done. But from there, moving forward, as I was in my recovery early on and just like working through things and growing and learning, my children, my two adult children and my two now teenager children, they were starting to have difficulties from the aftermath of having a parent that struggled with substance use disorder. And they're, somewhat acting out because there's gaps in parenting and things like that. And I wasn't setting as good of an example. And so, there's different kinds of mental health things that came from that for one of my daughters. And so I really had to start taking a look at myself. How am I affecting my kids right now? So I apologize for things that I had done to them in the past, working on changing those things. I made space for them to come to me about the things that they needed to talk to me about my behavior and how that affected them or hurt them. And then I started recognizing that currently, what are the kinds of things that I need to change about myself to help them and just to be a better parent and person in general. And one of those things was not yelling. It was very clear to me at a point in time over a couple of years ago that whether it was that I was upset with their behavior or anything, that raising my voice or yelling was absolutely not going to work in my home because there was too much fighting and different kinds of things in my home with my spouse. And so that was a huge trigger for them. So I was able to, let my accountability ladies know that I was going to work on this and get tools together and just start dealing with things in a much healthier way. And what got me to do that was the love of my children. I just really saw the struggle for them and started to really understand that I needed to change my behavior now. And that's just one example of handfuls of things that I've worked on over the last 10 years. And so taking responsibility looks like, recognizing and not being selfish and not just being like, well, but I was upset. No, I have better ways that I can handle things. If this is causing distress to people around me, then I need to figure out what differently I can do. And that's taking responsibility.
Right.
Yeah. And finding what that looks like for me. And I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And always taking responsibility when they bring something to me that was something that happened in the past or now, and creating a space for my children to be able to have their emotions and feelings.
Right.
And being in a healthy space for myself where I'm going to adults to be able to be helped with the things that are going on and allowing my children to be children and allowing their emotions to be had in a safe space where I wasn't like, oh yeah, no, you can't cry or go to your room or whatever, and letting them feel their feelings.
Yeah.
Like we all need, whether we're adults or children. Yeah. What were you going to say?
Right, right. No, I absolutely agree. And what my personal experience was, when I was in my drinking days, I pretty much abdicated all my responsibilities, to other people. you know, primarily my wife, you know, because bills weren't getting paid when I was responsible for that. The checkbook would drive me insane trying to find that 10 cents that was off rather than just putting a minus in the column and moving on. And just absolutely trying to have no responsibility at all. And yeah, talk about selfish and self-centered. I mean, that's the crux of the biscuit when it comes to how I, as an alcoholic, behave. Because if I don't have any accountability, I can do whatever I want. And all I wanted to do was to be drunk, you know, 24 hours a day. So, you know, taking responsibility back, you know, was a long process as well, because there were trust issues. Of course, you would have trust issues. You know, when you have a many-year history of off and on, you know, making really bad decisions. I like to say I was really good at making bad decisions. It's going to take some time to build that trust back up in any relationship, but specifically with the spouse. And I know from observation that a lot of marriages don't survive one of the members getting sober. And that's not just necessarily if both, you know, my wife is a normie. She doesn't drink. Now she's one of these people who have half a glass of wine and walk away from it. You know, I don't understand that at all. That's alcohol abuse as far as I'm concerned.
You're like, what?
Right. But she's that kind of person. And alcoholics like me go through these huge upheavals when they change, you know, when they stop drinking. And we do these wild swings of emotion. It's like, you know, we either throw ourselves into work and abuse our time with our spouses to that extent, and that, you know, we think we're bringing in money that's, you know, going to solve the relationship problem. Well, no, it doesn't. Or we go to the other end and we just, you know, want to be subservient and scraping in front of the spouse, and that puts them in a weird position to become abusive. You don't want to do that. So It's really important to build back in a slow, certain pace. When people come into AA, one of the things we tell them is that other people are probably going to notice that you are changing before you notice it. And that tends to be true. I remember it was probably a year after I got into the program and started working the steps, or had worked the steps with another man, that my wife handed me back a debit card so that I could go to the store and get something. So I went and got it, and I came back, and I went to hand her the debit card, and she says, no, you keep that. And so that was like, I didn't know if I was really responsible enough at that point. But she saw the change and felt comfortable with it.
That's really cool. That makes me think of how important it is to have people around us to be able to point out those things.
Right, exactly.
It feels really good because you're right. We don't always see it.
That's awesome. Right, right. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, with your family, the changes you have made, well, let's face it, with the younger children, they're not fully cooked. And they got some makeup time to do, and just the standard growing that we all have to go through to a certain point. They'll probably appreciate it later, but I know your adult children have a fantastic appreciation for the change you've gone through.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they talk to me now, and I'm involved in their lives. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, hard to believe you're a grandma, but
I am.
You are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those grandchildren will never see you high.
This is true.
That's amazing. I've heard that so many times from people in the program, that my grandchildren now will never know me as a drunk, you know, like maybe my children did.
Yeah.
Or that my daughter will now let me take my grandson fishing.
Right. Because there's a trust that's been rebuilt because they see your actions and change.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because I feel like our family members want that for us. They do. They really do. And if they are healthy and they can make boundaries. They know to do that to keep themselves and their children safe. Yeah. That's right, exactly. It's not a lack of love there. It's actually just them being healthy and recognizing that that person isn't healthy and they're protecting themselves. My kids, my adult kids still loved me. They always loved me. But at a certain point for a little while, they had to step back from me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I definitely think that the teenagers now, because it's been such a span of time, like I definitely know my middle daughter definitely sees the changes and stuff like that and really appreciates it. She's very verbal and things. And it's been a really cool journey to also have them attend over at Restoration Night at my church and be working on the youth version of these things, you know, realizing, you know, things about themselves and talking about things in their lives and just having a space where, you know, these teenagers get together and they're like, hey, yeah, this was really hard. I'm struggling with this, or this is going on at home, or whatever it may be. And they're there for each other in a little bit more of a serious, I don't know if I want to use the word serious. That would probably, you know, scare kids off, but in a space that's meant to be vulnerable if you want to be.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you
a safe space.
You could be serious in the sense of seriously discussing what you're going through and being comfortable with accepting feedback.
Right.
It takes a serious person to accept feedback. What would you call it?
Not as criticism. Right, exactly. And they're working on understanding tools as well. And I've heard of the youth giving their testimonies and, you know, working on inventories and just different kinds of things, you know, as the leaders are guiding them to understand things better. But
right.
Yeah, tools
right.
And right. learning and discovering and changing and, yeah.
Right.
So because, that they're not stuck all alone because not everyone has a counselor.
Right. And sometimes taking responsibility is accepting that mom or dad has changed. And that maybe it's fair to give them another chance.
Yeah, and like whereas I look back at things and I'm like, oh man, this is really just it sucks that all that happened and that my children were exposed to it. I am grateful now though that they are seeing that people can change and the kinds of ways of what that looks like.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
That you don't have to stay the same and just having the tools because I really couldn't comprehend at the time what was going to need to happen to make a better life for myself and for my family.
Right.
Yeah, I had
right.
no idea.
No. And that's the whole thing about recovery.
Right.
You know, we absolutely have to rely on other people to get through, to learn how to do things. And that's the tough part for the person entering into recovery. And now we're bouncing back to meeting people where they are.
Yeah, that, and I also want to jump in and say that it's so helpful that you go to meetings and meet with people and walk alongside of them and share your journey so that they can have hope and see that it can be done.
Right.
And you're sharing ways and experiences on how you did that.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to hear that. I mean, that's like a part of mentoring, sponsoring, being a leader. And so that's really cool.
Yeah. And there have been more than a few times where a sponsee is, you know, pose this scenario or this thing that they're going through. And it's like, I don't know how to deal this. And I'm like,
right.
Well, I've never dealt with that. So let's get on the phone and call my sponsor. We actually, in one case, went back to somebody who was actually sponsored by Bill. That's
go.
How many
generations
sponsors,
you went back.
Yeah, generations of sponsors and sponsees.
Nice.
Fortunately, it wasn't a super long because one of the sponsors was one of the old New Yorkers. So, but anyway, it went all the way back there before we got an answer, you know, to the question.
And that's the deal. That's the dedication that y'all have to be able to be there to support people.
Right.
And the same thing here that I see at the LRC, just the dedication to be able to support that. It's like if I don't know or Sean doesn't know or however it looks or something, we go talk to each other and we know who might be able to walk alongside of this person in a certain area. So when you walk into the LRC, it's not just about meeting one person. It's about meeting everyone.
Right.
And we have
right.
interns and we have volunteers. There's a lot of different
people
here.
It's
really neat.
Peer sharing and Yeah, it is fantastic. And you know what? You know what else is fantastic? We've almost wound up here.
Yeah, we're We're just about done, huh?
We're done.
So I just want to say that we are here at the Latah Recovery Center to walk alongside of you as a recovery coach, a peer recovery specialist in your needs with mental health or substance use disorder. And we're here to support you and just explore what your needs might be. And it's up to you to make those decisions on what that looks like and what you want to work on. But we're here. Every day. We open at 10 a.m. and we close at 8 p.m. at night, so that if you have a job that you work into the evening, like the most of us here that work 40 hours a week, we're still available for you. Right. And there are meetings here on weekends, but we are not open on the weekends.
Right.
But yeah, we're here Monday through Friday. Yeah. It's not staffed. Yeah. Right. And we also have, you know, as our calendar says, nude meetings throughout the week, except for Wednesday for AA. And then we have NA all week long at 7. And you can get on to the LRC site and see the calendar.
Right.
Or you can give us a call. Yeah, and we'll answer all your questions.
Yeah. And if you're curious about AA, just go to aadistrict22.org, and there is, you can go on the schedule, and there's a meeting every night of the week in Moscow except Saturday night, and Saturday night there's a meeting in Pullman.
Sweet.
And there's more meetings in Pullman, but if you're here in Moscow, we got you covered.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So we're going to wind it up then. Thank you again, Denise, for carving out an hour in your busy day to talk with us.
My pleasure.
And share your experience, strength, and hope. And I am going to sign out with the usual. Remember, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health, you do.
Down on me. Looks like I'm a fire.